Hey there, fellow travelers. Welcome to the Tolkien Road, episode 306. Greta.
306. Hey.
Did you know what's always right?
I do, actually.
What is always right?
The sea.
The sea is always right.
The sea is always right.
That's right. Like a good Numenorean, you know, the sea is always right.
The sea is always right.
In this episode, we will be discussing episode 3 of The Rings of Power, Adar. Yeah. One of those two. Before we get started, we'd like to give a double up air five to our patrons. Get those hands up there. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Whoopsht.
Nice.
Special thanks to this episode's executive producers, John R., Caitlin of Tea with Tolkien, Jacob Lockham, John H., and Scotchy Bobo. Hey, if you want to join in the weekly whoopsht double up air five, become a patron by visiting patreon.com/Tolkien Road. Your financial support helps the Tolkien Road to keep on evering on and land you some cool perks along the way. Learn more at patreon.com/Tolkien Road. YouTube, hit that like button. Don't forget to subscribe and let us know what's on your mind in the comments below. All right. Hey, don't forget, check out my Rings of Power commentary video, kind of standalone from our episode reviews. Where is Celeborn? Where in the world is that elf lord?
We still haven't seen him.
Mm-mm. Ain't no sign of him. All right. Well, let's talk about episode 3, Greta.
Let's do it.
Shall we?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So, a little background. This episode was directed by Wayne Che Yip, and this is the first episode of The Rings of Power he has directed. He's worked on a lot of other TV, several Doctor Who episodes, as well as The Wheel of Time, which was another recent Amazon fantasy show. Mm-hmm. And this episode was written by Jason Cahill and Justin Doble. Cahill has written for The Sopranos and Fringe, which, you know, we've never watched The Sopranos, but, you know, watched Fringe.
We have, yep.
Yeah. It's funny. It's always funny to me, it's a little side note on Fringe, it's always funny to me that if you don't, like, pronounce Fringe, then it almost sounds like you're saying Friends. So it's like, oh, cool, he wrote for Friends.
That's true.
Everybody's like, din, 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 din. Yeah, all right. So anyway, that was completely useless. Sorry about that. So Cahill has written for Sopranos and Fringe. Yeah, and then Doble, I have no idea. Couldn't find any info on him. I'm sure it's out there, but yeah, you know, not a lot. All right, so that's the background. And let's do a recap as we did with episode 2.
Perfect.
Spoiler alert, if you haven't seen the episode yet, we're going to spoil everything for you. So if you don't want it spoiled for you, then don't listen to this before you watch the episode 3. All right. The episode begins with Arandir dragged into an orc trench. Then Galadriel awakens on a Numenorean ship along with Halbrand, and meets the ship's captain, Elendil. The ship returns to Numenor. Galadriel and Halbrand come before Tar Miriel and Pharazôn. We meet Isildur at work aboard another Numenorean ship, and then meet his sister, Eärion, on shore. Tar Miriel confronts Elendil about his allegiances. Arandir conspires with other captive elves to escape the orc camp. Galadriel learns that Elendil does not, like most Numenoreans, hate her and actually knows Quenya, which is the Elvish language, one of the Elvish languages. Halbrand gets into it with some local ruffians and whoops them. When I say whoops them, like, he, like, really messes them up. Galadriel explores Elendil's Hall of Lore and realizes that Sauron's symbol actually forms a map of the Southlands. We learn from Elendil that the last king of Numenor still lives and was forced from the throne for his loyalty to the elves. Nori and Poppy debate what's to be done about the stranger. The rest of the Harfoots discover the stranger, and Nori and her family are punished for his presence in their midst. Elendil and Isildur debate how to return Galadriel to Middle-earth. Galadriel confronts Halbrand with knowledge of who he is, which is the rightful king of the Southlands. Galadriel asks him to return to Middle-earth with her for business purposes.
Strictly business purposes.
Strictly business purposes.
Mm-hmm. Nothing else.
Sorry. I just had to throw that in there. We're going to talk about that.
Strictly business. No funny business.
No funny business. Miriel speaking to her father, whom we don't see. The moment we fear, the elf has... Sorry, that was... I need to explain that. Muriel, we see her on screen walking up into a tower, and she's looking at somebody and says to this person who we don't see, the moment we fear, the elf has arrived, right? And I believe she says father, so she's speaking to her father. The stranger joins the Harfoots on their migration. And then Aurandir and some other elves attempt their escape from the orc camp. Only Aurandir survives, and he remains captive. And then Aurandir is taken to Adar, whom we see blurrily, appearing quite elf or man-like. So, that is the recap for this episode.
Well done.
All right. Well, now that the recap is done, let's discuss our thoughts on this episode.
Let's do it.
All right. Well, one thing I'll start off by saying is... Adar. It is Sindarin for father. So Sindarin is another Elvish language, right?
Mm-hmm.
We mentioned Quenya earlier, and then Sindarin is another Elvish language, and Adar means father in Sindarin, and it's closer related to Atar, right? Which is Quenya. And you think about this. So for those of you who are quite familiar with the Legendarium. Ilúvatar, right, is the all-father, right? So Ilu, meaning all, and then Atar, meaning father, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the idea. So this Adar is, it would seem, the name means father, right? This person's name means father. So father of orcs, I don't know. Maybe that's what we're going to find out in the next episode. I don't know if it's going to be Sauron or not, right? There was no dead giveaways. I'm kind of thinking we're meant to think it's Sauron, but it's not going to be Sauron, right? Maybe it's one of somebody that works for Sauron, right?
Mm.
I just don't feel like they'd reveal Sauron quite yet, you know? I think it's supposed to remain a mystery who Sauron actually is. So, I'm not sure if the orcs... If the orcs know what that word means, if they know enough Sindarin to know what that word means, but that is what that word means in Sindarin. All right. I just have to say again, I know we talked about this last time. I really, really like the title sequence and the theme music. I really do like those things.
The theme music
is really good.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And the imagery of the... Okay, question. Are those like seeds or what? Like, what is it that's forming the shapes and blowing around?
Grains of sand.
Okay.
I kind of think it's meant to like sort of make us think of like the raw material of the earth that's used to like, you know, form different, you know, maybe it's like metallic, you know, that's like kind of used to make, you know, I don't know anything about metallurgy, but that's used to make the final, you know, the final metals that, you know, like make rings or make weapons,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
It's lovely. Yeah, it is. It's a really good opening.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
My next thought is, what is this city we see in Numenor? We're never told what the name of the actual city is that they come into. So they come into a port. And the most well-known port of Numenor is the port of Romena. Now, this to me, so it's fine. Like, and I wish they'd name it, right? It would be nice if they name it. I guess I'll just lay that there because I'm going to come back to that point in a little bit. With Farazón, I wrote this down wrong. We are not to invite your father's cloud back overhead. So he says something. I wrote this. We don't want to invite your father's cloud back overhead. I think he says something along those lines. Anyway, they don't want to invite the cloud, her father's cloud, back overhead.
Talking to Galadriel.
Talking to Tarmiriel. Right. They're having a conversation at a particular moment after, when it's just the two of them.
Okay.
And so this got me thinking, like, what's meant by that, right? Like, what is, like, the cloud that they want to invite back overhead? Now, for me, this really gets me thinking, maybe, you know, they're going to talk about, like, the cult of the Mental Tarma, right? Which is basically the religious cult of Numenor per Tolkien's Legendarium.
Mm-hmm.
And are they going to talk about like the idea that like, you know, of what that particular cult entails, because that's one of the themes of the story of the Second Age, of the downfall of Numenor, right. is that they, the later Numenoreans reject the religion right. that had been given to them, right? That had basically been given to them when they, when the island kingdom of Numenor began. And this religion entailed that they would basically 3 times a year go and worship the supreme god on top of the Mentaltarma, which is the big, I assume, the mountain they're intending to show in the background of all the Numenorean scenes in this show, that they're trying to show that that's the Mentaltarma way up there, right? And it's this mountain that's really tall at the center of the island of Numenor. So, so Farazone said this, and that kind of got me like raised an eyebrow and made me think like, maybe we're going to see more about that. It's surprising to me that, that Muriel's father is still alive, because, well, I think I should say, it seems like it's a violation of the lore to me that, that Tar Palantir is still, that Muriel's father is still alive, because her father was Tar Palantir, and my understanding was that he wasn't deposed. He was, I mean, he died. He tried to restore the, like Numenor to its, to the, you know, to kind of its old ways, but he ended up dying. And then before Muriel could really ascend to be the queen, Farazone, who was her cousin, basically forces her to marry him, and he assumes, he usurps the throne, right? Mm-hmm. So we're already seeing a big what seems to be a big divergence from the lore of the Second Age there. So, and then I'll say this thing also really surprised me too. Tar Muriel apparently doesn't know who Elendil is.
Yeah, that is, I thought that was weird.
Now, the reason that's what, so before I go into it, why is it weird to you?
Well, I mean, it's just that he's like, he's an important person
yeah.
in Numenor.
Yeah.
Right? I mean.
Well, in fact, like, he's a nobleman.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he's basically comes from a noble family, right? It's almost like you kind of think about it in terms of like, and you know, we'll just say like Democrats and Republicans, right? It's kind of like the two political parties in Numenor. You got the majority one and the minority one, right? The majority one are like the main royal, the royal house, right? And then it's like you've got the faithful, which Elendil is like the heir of the, like the nobility, he's a lord. I mean, he really is. Like he's like that level of importance. So it's surprising to me that they kind of make him this like just lowly captain, you know, like ship captain, right? Like that there's no, that she wouldn't know who this guy is. I'm not sure why they would make that choice, but a lot of things have escaped me at this point. So,
yeah.
So yeah, she should know who Elendil is. Let's see. Farazone. All right. This guy, not at all like I pictured our Farazone. All right. This guy looks way too friendly.
You thought he looked friendly?
I mean, he looked like Mr. Rogers. I'm just saying like to me, first of all, like Farazone, I've always pictured him as like this, like, tall, imperious, like cat-like, haughty, and just like he's like one of these people who's like powerful but full of despair on the inside, right? And like, and he's working out that despair in the most like unhealthy way, right? Like in a way that's like he knows he's powerful, but he's like this life is all I have, right? Like he just comes off as pretty lame to me compared to I think how Tolkien portrays him. Even though we don't get like deep portraits of him, we get enough information about his actions and who he was and the kinds of things he did that this guy, and by the way, he would not have a beard. You know, I'm sorry. He like the royal house and the Numenoreans, none of them should have beards. I'll just leave that there. it's coming from a guy with a beard, people. All right. So I'm just saying that's Tolkien, because the reason they don't have beards is because they're descendant from the elves, right? They have a strong bloodline of the elves, right? Because they're all descended from the house of Elros, right? The royal line of the Numenoreans. Mm-hmm. Both Ar-Pharazôn, or Pharazôn here, and Elendil would be descended from this line of Elros, and so they would not have beards.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
He just really it definitely seemed like Tar Miriel was like the one that wore the pants in the relationship. Like she was the one kind of directing things, and he was just like there.
Well, my prediction is that they're going to set up this thing where Mariel has to make a choice between kind of like the path that Elendil goes down and the path that Pharazôn wants to go down, and then she's going to choose to go like down the path of the faithful, right, of the lords of Andúniae, which is what the house of Elendil is following, the kind of the faithful, right? And then Pharazôn is going to not like that, and he's going to he's going to usurp the throne at that point, right? Because if they don't have him usurp the throne, then that like I just don't have anything more to give in terms of like surprise, like being surprised about the choices that have been made on this show, because it's just everything so far has not been the way I would have done it, right? Or most of the things so far have not been the way I would have done them. But yeah, basically I think Ar-Pharazôn should have basically been like a good-looking Voldemort, right? Like you know, that's basically the kinds of vibes, you know, he should be giving off, is like, you know, that he's just like this like really big, like tall, strong, imperious, you know, just like totally haughty, like, you know, just better than everybody, but just like seething with despair below the surface, right? You know, just this classic power villain, right? The villain that gets into total power and uses it for all they can, right? But they're just totally like empty on the inside, right? Yeah. So he just kind of looks like, you know, he just doesn't match up to that for me. So anyway, that's where I'm at on that.
Yeah. No, I agree. I didn't really have a strong picture of him in my head, but he definitely didn't give off the vibes that I expected.
Yeah,
Pharazôn to give off.
Yeah. I mean, keep in mind, again, spoilers, everybody, for if you ever, you know, don't know the full story of what happens, but within Tolkien's actual writings. But this is the guy who, like, not only does he lead, not only does he capture Sauron, right? But then he turns around and he's like, and now we're gonna sail the Blessed Realm, right? He's basically like, come on, we're gonna take down heaven on earth, right? You know, we're gonna go to war against the gods, right? You tell me this guy's gonna lead you in war against the gods? Like he's wearing a disguise that we just don't know about. Mm. Like, but that this guy just does not look like the guy who's gonna lead you in war against the gods. So anyway, do with that what you will. Yeah, the sea is always right. How do you feel about that, Greta? We already brought that up.
I mean, that refrain was mentioned several times in the episode. And the first time I heard it, I was like, wait, what? Like, what? The sea? And then, like, I was just confused. And then the second time I was like, I thought about it a little bit and I was like, it just doesn't make sense. Like, it's cheesy. Like, I don't know what that means. Like, it just is like an empty string of words.
No,
it totally holds no water.
Ooh, no boom.
Water. What?
Nice. Snap. Oh, man. That was good. That was good.
Thanks.
Even if it just happened. So spontaneous.
It was spontaneous.
Yeah, I felt the same way. I just feel like it's another example of, like, I feel like in all three of the episodes so far, they've had lines where they were supposed to, feel very like something that Tolkien would have written. And you just end up being kind of like, sounds like you're trying to write something that Tolkien would have written. but it didn't work very well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and this one, I was just like, the sea is always right? Like, really? Even when you like you drown, is the sea right?
That's like, a good question.
I mean, okay, I can kind of get the idea of like the sea is always right, you know, when you're a mariner, like you need to respect the sea and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah.
I just, you know, and again, like, I just feel like this, it's not, the level of writing is not where it should be for all the money that's being invested mm-hmm. in this thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, man, there's a lot of money invested. Could you not have could you not have found like some script doctors who were like wrote really outstanding, like had just really good with turn of phrase to just sit down and be like, this line, I know what you're trying to do here. And this line needs to be like this, right? Here's five options. Pick the one you like, but it needs to be like this. I just can't believe that there's not something like that going on, because it's more like the concern is with like, okay, we got to write this scene so that we can hand it to the director. And it's like, it almost just feels mechanical, you know?
Yeah, I would agree.
It's disappointing. It is disappointing.
And I'll say too, I'm not super impressed with like the effects either. Mm. Like that dog wolf thing in the orc camp.
I know.
That was terrible.
I know.
Like I was like, ugh, yeah, okay, you know. It was bad.
No, I'm not, and I'm not trying to keep you from talking
about it.
It
almost looked like it was like I don't know, like claymation or like it did not look real for one thing.
It looked very CGI.
It was not impressive at all.
Not impressive for me. No. I think I wrote this down later. I wrote a lot, and like when I scored it and about like explaining my score. I'll just go ahead and throw this one out there though. I'm not impressed with Farazone, who I hoped I would be very impressed by. And I really was not impressed with Numenor, right? And just it did not seem like this place that Tolkien had it in his own mind that it was.
Yeah, I feel the same way though. I thought like when they were coming in on the boat, like I was really impressed by that. I thought it looked beautiful.
Well,
right?
Those introductory scenes were okay. Yeah, they were pretty good.
And I was like, oh yeah, it looks nice. But then once I'm sorry, I like use the word vibe a lot because I don't know what other word to use. But yeah, just like once you got in there and like met the people and like experienced kind of the community of Numenor, I was like, this doesn't feel right. Like it just didn't. There's And I don't know what it was. Like, it was too, like, I don't know. Yeah, it just didn't fit with how I thought Numenor should be.
For me, it's a thing that I'll get into a little more later, but I just, there's so many things so far. And my mindset has been like, okay, I know I'm going to have a lot of issues with how they're telling the story. I already mm-hmm. know that. I knew that before episode one aired. But I thought, okay, there's so much money invested in this. Maybe the writing within the episodes will be really good. And maybe just like kind of the details will mm-hmm. be really good, right? And it mm-hmm. could still be a great show, even if I'm not happy with like how they adapted it, if you will, right? Yeah. But so far, I'm not really that. I feel like it's underwhelming, you know, compared with the expectations that I would have had with all the money going into this, right? Right. You know, you're like, you really want to like knock people's, you think they really want to knock people's socks off. But, you know, just so many of the little details. It's fine to use the word vibe because at the end of the day, like, think about it, right? What was Tolkien's whole thing? It was, he didn't want his readers to have to engage in suspension of disbelief. Right. He wanted his readers to be enchanted. That's mm-hmm. the vibe thing, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I have to get you into the, he never used the word vibe, but it's like he was trying to say, I have to get you into the vibe, right? I have to get you into the, so engrossed in the thing that I've created that you forget that it's not real.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And, and just create this sense of wonder and enchantment within your soul as you're watching it, as you're beholding it, as you're reading it, that you're completely engrossed in it. Okay. It's, and so far for me, it's falling flat on that account. I just, you know, it's like all of the little, like, we'll talk more about that towards the end of the episode, but let's continue kind of going through and reacting to different aspects, too. But yes, the vibe is not up to par. All right. Valar. The Valar are name dropped. So that was cool.
Yeah.
First time.
Yeah.
I think they've been name dropped so far. Mm-hmm. But they're name dropped in a bad way by Tar Miriel, right? She's kind of, I think she says it kind of sneeringly, right? Now, again, my guess is that I wonder with Tar Miriel if she's kind of, she's got her feet in both parties, right? One foot in each party, right? Because I think that, because in the story, she's like, she's kind of drawn towards the House of the Faithful. She's the daughter of a king who wanted to return Numenor to its old ways. And then her throne is usurped. So, you know, I think my like I said earlier, my guess is that Elendil will lead her back to that path.
Mm-hmm.
Elros is also mentioned, and so that was cool. And
there's actually a picture of him.
Yeah, with Elrond.
Yeah, in the House of Lore.
In the House of Lore.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. Galadriel. Galadriel says, "Ours was no chance meeting, not fate, not destiny, nor any of the words men use to speak of the forces they lack the conviction to name." And then she goes on and attributes it to something greater. Come on, Galadriel, you're being a hypocrite, right? It's like she says, men don't have the conviction to name the actual things. They just use like generic terms like fate and destiny. And then she doesn't use, and then she says something greater, right? Like, okay, don't throw down and say how bad men are, Galadriel, if you're not going to actually name what the greater thing is, right? Like, that was just another point of dialogue where it was like, come on, are you going to, like, why don't you just say Iluvatar, right? Or why don't you say Manwë, right? Why don't you say, or the Valar, or something like that, right? Why don't you name, ascribe fate or destiny to the workings of this greater thing? But you just say greater. I was like, That was another line that just like a failure of writing for me, you know?
Yeah, I would agree. Although I will say, like, I did think that was kind of cool that Hilda, what's his name?
Halbrand
is like this, you know, the king of whatever, the Southlands or whatever. And Galadriel is, you know, obviously a Noldorian princess, queen, whatever. So I did think that was kind of cool. Like, I kind of liked that development of that plot line of them, like, kind of aligning, like, joining forces, right? To, like, bring elves and men back together. Or right there, you know.
Yeah.
But.
Well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't like that there's, like, they're trying to start a romance between them. Like, I don't like that at all.
So they are trying to start a romance between them. You think so?
I think so.
Yeah.
I mean.
That was my next thing.
That was the vibe I got.
Are Galadriel and Halbrand a thing? Because if they are, Celeborn's going to be pissed. All
totally
right, I'm just
PO'd.
Saying. Be like, Galadriel.
Rightfully so.
Galadriel, I let you go off to the Blessed Realm. You don't even say goodbye to me. And then you meet some mortal. And now he's your boyfriend, right? And Galadriel's like, we're just work friends. We're just work friends. Come on.
I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. But like, there was... I don't know. No, I would be shocked.
Oh, no, you're totally right. You're totally right.
Okay.
I don't want to believe it. I don't want to believe it because this is not how it's supposed to be, right? In terms of the lore.
Yeah.
But of course they're doing this, right? You know, and so what everybody tells me at this point, and again, like everybody, I don't like really read all of the like intel on what they're going to do, right? Because I know that's out there. You know, like what the plans are, and like people like kind of have inside information and that kind of thing. But people did tell me in response to the last couple of videos that Celeborn is going to be introduced later down the line, and that they're not that Galadriel and Celeborn are not actually married yet, and haven't even met yet apparently, even though like it clearly says at the end of the first age that they're married. It's so they're going to meet at some point. So it would seem that we're having a love triangle set up between us, or, you know, between Galadriel, Celeborn, and Halbrand, right? So,
to be fair, love triangles do make things more interesting.
Well,
but
I mean,
if you know,
yeah. So that's what it's become. It's being turned into a romance novel. All right. Yeah. All right. Well, so I will say the big thing for me that I'm actually enjoying are the mysteries, right? So we've got the stranger. Mm-hmm. Who is the stranger, right?
Yeah.
I heard a really interesting theory from one of the comments. And I'm not, you know, I don't feel like this is necessarily right, cause I dug into it a little more, but it's a really interesting theory. The theory is that the stranger is the man in the moon that is referenced in Fellowship of the Ring and in some of the poetry recited by the hobbits, right?
Oh.
And the idea here is that he's like a whole, like they like have this poetic lore about him because he actually was a character, you know, like came to them in their like distant ancestry, right? Like deep in the past, right? I thought that was a really interesting theory. Mm-hmm. So shout out to whoever it was. I'm sorry I didn't write down who said that, but look in the comments from one of the last few episodes and you'll see the person who dropped that comment there. So I salute you, and if you want to take credit for it in the comments below, please do.
I want to say real quick too that I really continue to enjoy the Harfoot plot lines.
Yeah,
like I really, yeah, that's probably the high point for me in the show so far, is like whenever the Harfoots come on screen, I'm like, yay.
Yeah, well, I mean,
that's kind of the extent of
Tolkien
my
knew
enjoyment
it.
Right now.
Tolkien knew it, and that's why I'm like, you know, I'm cool, even though they, you know, the Legendarium says that there were no hobbits in that time period.
I'm not hobbits.
Yeah, I'm not against it, because I figure if Tolkien had written this story in full, he would have worked them into the story somehow, or something like the Harfoots. All right, Adar, who is he, right? And we're going to, you know, I assume we're going to find out in the next episode, or maybe two episodes down the line, because we didn't get any Elrond or dwarves or right. Celeborn, or I'm sorry, we didn't get any...
Not Celeborn.
Gil-galad or right. Celebrimbor.
Celebrimbor.
In this episode. So I assume we're going to get, we're going to see Adar either in the next episode or maybe a little further down the line and find out who he actually is. Halbrand, who is he, right? Now we're getting a clearer picture that he's some important person from the Southlands, meant to be the king again.
He has a very, like, Aragornish vibe to him. Like, they're trying to, like, I mean, right? Yeah. Aragorn's a rightful king, and but nobody knows it, and he's living, like, this, you know, castaway lifestyle. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it also kind of makes me think, like, maybe... he is a, maybe it's Sauron, right? Because maybe he is,
Who's Sauron?
Maybe Halbrand is Sauron in disguise, right?
Oh.
Because being from the Southlands, like, so maybe maybe there was a guy who was actually the Halbrand guy, and Sauron killed him and took his image and like took his shape in order to kind of like get himself on the inside with Numenor, right? And Galadriel, right? So just a theory. I have no idea if that's going to come true or not. But that gets me to the next thing. Theo, right? Who we didn't see in this episode, but we asked last episode, who's his father, right? Because there was a weird stuff happening when he picked up the sword and everything. We don't know who his actual father is. But he's also a Southlander, which makes me think, like, you know, either that Halbrand may be his father, right?
Oh.
Or that maybe... there's some other mysterious figure who's his father. Maybe it's this Adar, right? And maybe there's going to set up this kind of like power struggle between Theo and Halbrand, right?
Oh.
At a later date, right? Because it seems like Theo's got some kind of evil streak going on within him, you know, whatever was happening in that last episode with the sword. Although then again, why would the orc try to kill him if he didn't? Maybe the orc was not really trying to kill him, but just trying to make it look like he was killing him. I don't know. Tarmiriel, who's her father? Well, spoiler, in the Legendarium, it's Tar Palantir. But we don't actually see him on the screen in this episode, so I assume we're going to get revealed who her father is and how is it that he's still alive at this point, right? And, you know, what role is he going to play in the rest of the series? And then lastly, what's this prophecy about the elf that she mentions to her father? What's this prophecy about the elf that she mentions to her father at the very end of the episode, or towards the end of the episode? So, yeah, lots of mysteries, and I think so far those are the things I'm enjoying most about the show. That, you know, that's kind of where I'm at. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Any other kind of overall thoughts on this before we, you know, go into Legendarium issues and then give our scores?
No, I will say this was definitely my least favorite out of all three. I found it quite unentertaining, except for the Harfoots. Like, I was just like, even the stuff they tried to, like, you know, where they try to put action in, like with the orcs and whatever. I mean, Arondir has some mean roundhouse kicks. I will say that. And he can wield a chain pretty good. But yeah, I was totally and completely underwhelmed. And I will say, though, besides the Harfoots, I really like Elendil. He's like...
Elendil.
But that's... yeah. Well, other than that, I don't have a lot else to say.
Yeah, and that's a good thing because I think you're probably you're meant to like Elendil, right? Because of his role in the overall story.
Yeah.
You know, he is for sure an ancestor of Aragorn, right? So, yeah. What did you think of Isildur, right? And knowing, you know, of course, Isildur is like perhaps even better known in terms of Lord of the Rings than Elendil is, right?
Yeah, that's true. I liked Isildur.
Yeah.
I liked him a lot. Yeah. I thought he seemed like a nice guy.
Yeah.
He's pretty cute too.
Yeah. So, and Isildur, you know, he has a bad rap because of what happened in Lord of the Rings, but he's a pretty great, he is a pretty heroic figure, he actually. Is.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, one other thing I'll say about the family of Elendil is this character, Eärion.
Yeah, his daughter.
Right.
Like, is she in?
She's not canonical.
She's not canonical.
She's not canonical.
Okay.
So she's someone they made up for the series.
Okay.
And I don't have, as far as I understand, I don't have a problem with that, like, you know, adding characters like that, obviously. I figured they would do things like that. My hope was just that there wouldn't be any violation of the Legendarium, of the established lore, in the process of doing so. So in this case, I don't think they have. We'll see. We'll see when, you know, we learn more about her character and everything like that. All right. So Legendarium issues. All right. So Elendil and Isildur would not have been born until 1500 years after the creation of the Rings of Power. And Sauron would have been fully back into the picture at that point, completely established in Mordor. Right. So in other words, when Elendil and Isildur are born, Sauron's been around for 1500 years as the king of Mordor, who's their enemy, right? And there's no, like, indication of any of awareness of any of that. I already mentioned the thing with Elendil being basically a nobleman, a Numenorean nobleman. So how is it that Tar-Miriel doesn't know who he is, right? Miriel appears to be ruling from Romana, a seaport. But the royal seat of Numenor, Armenelos, is landlocked. Now, they don't say this explicitly, but basically, there's no indication that they go on a trip when they hit Romana. They don't then make a journey to Armenelos, right? They just are there and the seaport, and they go visit the queen, right? So, why is she ruling from the seaport, right? When the ruling city is the one that's in the middle of the island, which is landlocked. And then I feel like Miriel I already said that. Yeah. So I won't hit that again. So, Greta.
Yep.
Do you want to give your score first or me? Maybe we need to do rock, paper, scissors for scores.
Yeah, you can do rock, paper, scissors.
All right. Rock, paper, scissors, shoot. You got to put your...
Oh.
Doesn't count.
Oh,
doesn't count.
No,
I'm just kidding. You got it. Do you want to go first or me?
Yeah, I'll just give mine. Mine, I'm going to give it a 4.
Okay.
Out of 10. I was between a 3 and a 4, but then I saw you gave it a 3. And I didn't want to, you know, give it the same score. So, although a 4, like, I think is kind of generous, to be completely honest. I very little good to say about this episode. I just really didn't enjoy it, except for the Harfoots. And I will say, like, there was this one scene where Elendil and Galadriel are riding to the House of Lore on the horses. And there was, like, that, like, shot of Galadriel on the horse. And I was just like...
I know.
I was like...
I felt the same way.
I was like, is that Galadriel? What is going on? It just seemed very cheesy.
She was having a happy moment.
Oh, my goodness. It was not... I don't know. I was like, did they get a stand-in for her? Like, I was very confused. Yeah. So, like, the effects, I mean... Yeah, we are talking about the wolf dog and that shot on the horse. Yeah, and the dialogue. I don't know. It just all fell very flat for me. Very, very flat. Although I will say, again, the Harfoots, that scene where, like, the night before the migration, where they're, like, remembering the people that were lost along the way. I found that really touching.
Mm.
Like, where they would raise their cups and say, "We will wait for you." I thought that was very... I liked that. And we got a little bit of insight into Poppy too, right? Because apparently her family was lost in the last migration. But anyway, I enjoyed that scene. That was probably my favorite. Other than that, I thought it was a snore fest. And ironically, this was the one episode I actually stayed awake for. I'm like, I should have just fallen asleep. That would have been better use of my time.
Well, then you would have had to watch, I would have made you watch it
again. I know. It's true. It's true. But anyway, so maybe I'll settle at a strong 3.5.
Strong 3.5.
3.5.
I don't like those words. I think that's an oxymoron, right? Strong.
It is an oxymoron. It's kind of meant to be. Yeah. And I'm sorry. I realized I gave away your score.
Before. Oh, no. You're good.
I didn't give you a chance to say it.
You're good. Yes. As Greta mentioned, I gave it a 3 out of 10. You know, I continue to want to like this show and give it a chance. And I think I might like it better if there was no source material and it was being created from scratch. I have a lot of issues with it, especially the total mangling of the timeline, but I knew that would happen going in. I think the thing I'm most disappointed by is that it feels overall like they're dumbing things down to appeal to as wide an audience as possible. And I don't just say that in terms of the lore. I feel like the storytelling and everything, just the details of it feel very like cookie cutter standard Hollywood fare. There are some bright points, but so much of the show seems flat. And here's the thing. I say dumbing things down, and I mean that, like, stop dumbing things down for people. Like, people are smarter than you think. Tell an awesome story. And if it's really awesome, this stuff is... The Lord of the Rings is the most popular novel of the 20th century. And it is a beast of a novel. It is not an easy read.
It's true.
But people love it. Stop dumbing things down for people. You disrespect the people and you don't call them to, like, raise their minds up to something that's awesome, right? Ugh. The problem is in the details of the storytelling. There's no sense of the spaces being covered, of the time having elapsed, just standard TV storytelling. With a massive budget, I would have expected true cinematic art. I'm underwhelmed by Numenor. Utterly underwhelmed by what I've seen. And Numenor, I should be totally, like, Numenor should be a feast for the eyes. In every way, right? This is Atlantis in all of its glory, right? This is the apex of a human kingdom on Earth. These people, there was no indication in this episode that these people, the royal house, they live for 200, 300 years, right? There's no indication of that. There's no indication that they have elvish blood, right? And nothing of that. Also, I don't think these folks that write the show, that make the show, truly understand elves. I don't think they get, like, the idea that these people are immortal and have lived for thousands of years, right? And what the things that matter to them are vastly different from what matter to us. Mm. Somebody brought up in the last episode, I thought it was really interesting, because I've asked for feedback, and we'll go over the, lots of y'all submitted things on the A Dog May Bark at the Moon thing and gave your own twists on that, and some of them were really funny. Someone was like, "A dog may bark at the moon, but this show sucks." in that same episode, in the conversation, it was a conversation I believe between Elrond and Celebrimbor. There was a reference that was made to the dwarves caring for things like an aging parent. And it's like, why would elves in the Second Age be talking about caring for things like an aging parent?
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, you could say, like, well, they know that men care for aging parents. Okay, but that's not their normal experience as elves, right? That's not like the thing they do as elves. They could have said, like, as men care for aging parents or something like that. But when they think of a parent, of an elf parent, right, they're not thinking of someone who they need to take care of because they're aging, right?
Yeah.
They're thinking of someone like, that's my father and he's mm-hmm. immortal like I am, right? Mm-hmm. Just little details like that.
Mm-hmm.
Furthermore, the show lacks any sense of the numinosity that I would have expected to see in this adaptation. Let me just define that word, because it's a word I like to use a lot with reference.
You used it in the last review, yeah, too.
So I'm gonna go to the Google definition of it here. Numinous is a term derived from the Latin numen, meaning arousing spiritual or religious emotion, mysterious or awe-inspiring, right? Surpassing comprehension or understanding, mysterious, right? This is a world where the gods interact with the human beings, right? With the people, okay? Where you have immortal people, like the elves, okay? And we aren't getting any sense of that in any of these things, right? There's none of that vibe mm-hmm. going on,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Mm-hmm.
That to me is a failure of the show, right? Like, it should be like we should feel like the gods are there, right? Like, there should be like little notes that you're just kind of like, ooh, what's going on there, mm-hmm. right? You know, and I'm just not getting that.
Yeah.
Folks, I want to like the show. I really am trying to give it the best shot with every episode that I can. I want you go back and listen to all the episodes where we talked about this coming show for the last 3, 4, 5 years, and you know how much I was looking forward to this, and it is just not hitting the bar, right? It's not even coming close to what you would expect from a show that's investing this much money into adapting Tolkien mm-hmm. to the screen.
Mm-hmm.
I'm intrigued to learn the answers to many of the cliffhangers, right? But I'll give them that, and the show is enjoyable enough from a visual perspective, although not the complete feast that, you know, you'd think with the budget.
Mm-hmm.
So if I weren't a huge Tolkien nerd, I'd probably give it a 6, maybe a 7, right? But as a Tolkien nerd, everything just feels off, right? If I wasn't a huge, if this wasn't derived from Tolkien, and I wasn't a Tolkien nerd, right? It would feel kind of like, okay, this is kind of an enjoyable fantasy show, right? It's not great, but it's an enjoyable fantasy show, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at everything from the Legendarian perspective and you know what it could be and it should have been,
yeah,
right? You're just like, what is, man, this is a huge disappointment. A huge disappointment.
Yeah.
A huge disappointment. All right. So there we go. Episode 3.
Episode 3.
We're going to keep watching. We're going to be right here to give you our bummer takes, I guess. And I do think that at some point there will probably be some episodes where it's like, okay, that's cool, right? That mm-hmm. you know, this, and I think there will be some cool things, and there are mm-hmm. some things I actually like about it. Because mm-hmm. if there was nothing I liked about it, I'd give it a 0, right? But there are some things I like about it. I do like the Harfoots. Mm-hmm. I think that's an enjoyable part of the story.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot more to come. So
yes,
we'll see.
We are still early on.
But so far, disappointed.
Yeah.
Disappointed. Mm-hmm. All right. All right, you know, everybody. But I hope you're not disappointed with this podcast, with this show. And if you are not, which I assume you are not because you're still listening, subscribe, rate, or review us on iTunes or the platform of your choice. If you're a 5-star fan of The Tolkien Road, you can really help us out by heading over to iTunes, your preferred source for the show, and dropping us a rating and review. When you do that, it helps to get the word out about The Tolkien Road, which helps us to keep on evering on. And if you're on YouTube, hit that like button, subscribe to this channel, and hit that bell for notifications too. All right. Drop us a line wherever you can find us. You know the places. And I think that's all for this episode.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Thank you to our amazing patrons, especially the following: John R.
Caitlin FT with Tolkien.
Jacob Lockham.
John H.
Scotchy Bobo.
Ms. Anonymous.
Andrew T.
Red Hawk.
Shannon S.
Brian O.
Emilio P.
Zeke F.
James A.
James L.
Chris L.
Chuck F.
Azia V.
Ish of the Hammer.
Teresa C.
David of Pints with Jack.
Jonathan D.
Eric B.
Johanna T.
Mike M.
Robert H.
Paul D.
Julia.
Huerty.
Matthew W.
Joe Bagelman.
Chris K.
Jacob S.
Richard K.
Matt R.
Garrett P. As well as those celebrating their Patreon anniversary this month, in September of 2022, Brielle A.,
Dustin Q.,
Johanna T.,
and Robert S.
All right.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you all so much for watching and or listening. Mm-hmm. We will talk at you next time.
Bye, y'all.
Bye-bye.